This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Yes, it's the Whitecaps Weekly. It's Thursday, August 20th. I'm Patrick Johnston, downtown, as always, on the line. Mark Weber, who is in Vancouver, I believe. I don't know. Mark, where are you?
I'm in Kitsilano.
Oh, there you go. The Whirlwind.
Just coming back from UBC, coming back from training.
Mark Whirlwind Weber is your nickname. You've been around the continent several times now. You've also been doing tennis, and I believe you've been on the Sunshine Coast.
Not for work. Although I'm sure there's good stories over there. It's my happy place.
It is.
It's lovely. You hop on a half-hour ferry and you feel like you're a million miles away from the city. It's great.
Now, here's an interesting one. By the way, your little moment that you're able to catalog from the airport on Sunday, David Oestedt encountering with a positive angle fan, I suppose is the way to put it. That was quite the moment. It was just such an amazing thing to hear, and it was
you like that anecdote.
It was great, and it was like one of those ones that just lands on the platter, and you're like, well, and here's our story.
Yeah, even in, when I worked at UBC for all those years, 8 or 9 of them, one thing you learn, even never mind professional sport, any sort of level of competitive sport, you have that learning curve. At least I did as the communications officer there. Of kind of what to say in those awkward moments after a loss, whether you're encountering a player or a coach, and everyone reacts differently and everyone takes different amounts of time to get over it. And, but what you notice is the general public is not very good at understanding how seriously competitive athletes and coaches take these sorts of things, right? I mean, the natural inclination after a 4-3 thriller is to be like, wow, great game. But I think some people don't understand how gut-wrenching that is and how awkward a situation that makes it for them, the athlete receiving that sort of semi-compliment. I like David's reaction. I mean, when you're in a game like that, of course you have no appreciation for how good it is for someone neutral to be watching it. I mean, you're just absolutely furious and gutted. And it was interesting to hear some of the guys say, and the coaches actually say that felt as bad as losing a playoff game in Dallas last year, which is saying a lot. Now, I think you recover a bit quicker from it because it doesn't end your season. But in the moment, certainly after that collapse, it was a very, I don't even remember. That was as quiet and as upset as I've seen that locker room since that Dallas playoff defeat.
It was almost too hard to believe, and it was one of those ones that it had gone from an amazing Whitecaps performance and one that, you know, maybe they'd stolen a little bit given, I think, how well KC was playing overall to, yeah, that complete and utter what the hell just happened kind of feeling. Does the team have any, I mean, one of the other things you got from them on Sunday was that, you know, obviously this is now gut check time and how will we react to this? Do we have any sense of how the team has reacted in the past 3 or 4 days? I know you've sort of been doing various things, but.
Well, I disagree with you on the performance. I think they were full value for being up 3-1 and they should have been up 4 or 5-1 at that point. I mean, to go away and play the way they were cutting Kansas City apart in that game, and no one does that to KC, especially in KC, and the Caps have done that to a few teams this year, surprisingly, LA, Seattle, Kansas City. I mean, they are, attacking wise, this is a team really on a roll. And then of course KC, I mean, just dominated the last 10-15 minutes of the game. But in terms of how they reacted, this is the most intriguing sort of week of practice in terms of the emotional space of this team I think we've had all season. And they seem to it's pretty much business as usual. I mean, they had they had Monday off and they needed the rest. Tuesday, they had a big team meeting, talked about putting that one behind them and moving forward. And this team's been very good at that. Their record after the losses this year, I believe, is about 4-2-2. I don't remember.
It sounds right there. Right now. It sounds right
how many losses they have, but it's somewhere around that. It's good. And of course, they haven't lost more than two games in a row all season. You know, they've never gone on that skid that they've had in years past. So I think the evidence speaks for itself. Yeah, it was a tough loss to take, but even, you know, what I noticed, even at the airport, I ran into the team in Denver, on the stopover home. And even there, they were, you know, just, you know, getting back to their sort of, smiles and jokes. And, I think that was a pretty good sign that it wasn't going to weigh on them too much. But there's no question they know they have lessons to learn out of that game. I mean, they are ticked off with the way they blew it, with the way they blew it in Montreal, with, you know, the way they've basically threw away results there. So, I don't think this is the best defensive team in MLS for 24 games. You know, I wouldn't get too worked up over 10 bad minutes in Kansas City. I know the natural inclination is to react dramatically to that from a fan perspective. But so far the evidence suggests this is a pretty organized, disciplined defensive team. And if they go on a bad run now, of course you're going to point to that Kansas City collapse. Sorry, there's a garbage truck driving by me here.
No worries.
You're going to point to that as a turning point this season for the wrong reason. So it's up to them to make sure that no one's talking about that.
Is there any sense in framing it against the Kansas City 5-0 collapse to San Jose on Wednesday night?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, it was Carl Robinson was asked about that today, if he was surprised at that result. And I genuinely believe he wasn't. He said, you know, look, that just shows the importance of rotating your squad. And I think part of that is him trying to get people to understand why he's rotated his squad so much. It seems like every lineup he puts out comes under the microscope, and that's natural. But people have been questioning all season why we had 22 lineups in 22 games, 22 different lineups in 22 games. I can't remember exactly which game ended the streak. I think it was around there, 22 or 23. But and people picking apart his lineup for the Champions League a couple of weeks ago, and then for the Amway game. So I think you have to wait till August is done. You have to wait till the season is done to assess the body of work overall and figure out whether he made some right decisions and wrong decisions. Inevitably, there's going to be a bit of both. But what that Kansas City result shows is a couple of things. It's a very tough league. Anyone can beat anyone. And fresh legs have a lot to do with the outcome. I mean, that scoreline speaks for itself, of course. How one-sided it was is quite surprising. But, I'm not shocked that San Jose was able to go and get a win, considering the amount of games and the amount of energy Kansas City has put into the last 10 days.
It all kind of sets up. I mean, Dallas played the Galaxy and lost 2-1. It all sets up, again, another fascinating weekend at the top end of the table, both for the Western Conference mm-hmm. and for the league as a whole.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, like I have the privilege, the benefit of not, being emotionally connected to the team. I follow Spurs and maybe the way that some Caps fans follow the Caps. So I understand that you can't, it's sometimes hard to take a step back and just appreciate the thrill of it. But I mean, that's how I watch sport. Even the teams I really follow, I love a good race. And I think the majority of fans are appreciating. You'd rather be in this situation. You want games to mean something. And, you got Dallas coming in. They're 4 points back with a game in hand. You've just lost to KC, and that's made that head-to-head race more interesting. You've got LA surging now. You've got Seattle, who's just injected a bunch of talent and blown away Orlando 4-0. So they're obviously back, and they're coming off a Champions League win as well. Portland's right there. It's Salt Lake, can't be counted out. So it's going to be a tremendous end of the season. The fact that the Caps and Dallas play each other three times, weird scheduling. I don't think it's ideal that they didn't see each other till August because there was so much tension and there's just so many positive things about that rivalry carrying over from the end of last season. I would have liked to see him play earlier, but now you've got him three times in a couple of months, which should be thrilling. So there's just every single game is going to mean something, and every single week people are going to be talking about the standings, and teams are going to be up and down from 1 to 5. I've said it before, I do think LA is going to establish itself, atop the con. They're not going to run away with it, but I expect them to finish first. And, I think the margin that margin by the end of the season will be enough that, that maybe first place isn't in play in the last couple of weeks. But I think second through sixth is absolutely just going to be neck and neck the whole time. And we're going to be having conversations like this every week, and thank God for that.
A bit of a 1v1 looking at Dallas. They've lost twice in a row, which they hadn't done since May. But they've also had an incredible run of form on the whole in Vancouver, as long as the Whitecaps have been in MLS. And I'm just wondering, which do you think will be, is the more notable thing, that they are in a bit of a swoon, or the fact that they always come here and are always difficult to play against?
Well, they lost the road game. I mean, everyone loses road games, and then they lost to LA, and everyone loses to LA. So I don't really read too much into two results, even though the LA game was at home. Yeah, it's a very good LA team. Robbie Keane scores a couple, which he does to a lot of people. It's a good team. This is a good Dallas team. I think they always seem to have go on runs. I mean, they've had incredibly streaky runs the last couple of seasons, both wins and losses. So yeah, maybe it's the start of a dip, but I don't think so. I mean, you go through their lineup. There are a lot of similarities to the Whitecaps, I think, in how the team's built and in the strengths they have. And they've got, yeah, Caps fans are familiar with the team. I mean, they know the quality that's there. They know Blas Perez probably too well. He scored 4 goals against the Caps over the years. Fabian Castillo, one of the most exciting players in the league, and similar to Mane in terms of, you know, what he brings to a game. I mean, anytime he's on the ball, he can make something happen. Escobar, Mauro Diaz is the number 10, you know, similar to Pedro in sort of what he does for that team. So I think it's a great matchup. It really is. This is a good Dallas team. They're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to be, I think they're good enough to contend for second in the West. And, I wouldn't read too much into those last 2 weeks. And, these two teams seem to love to hate each other. I don't know if they remember that they dislike each other. I'm going to be kind of curious how much feeling is in this game. Even the coaches were getting into it last year with Martin Pert and Oscar Pereja going at it. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be silliness, but I think there'll be some bite in this one. And Perez, you know, Blas Perez and Kendall Watson, that'll be one of many, many fun matchups. I think, you know, Mane and Castillo and what they can each do for their respective teams will be fun. And you can really look all over the field and find some intriguing ones. And another, you know, a team that's also been good on set pieces, we saw the Caps certainly struggle without Waston in terms of aerial battles in Kansas City, and again, the team coming in with some big bodies and Perez and their center backs and Hedges and Lloyd, and that'll be, you know, defending aerial balls, defending set plays will be key in this one as well.
You took the words out of my mouth. I mean, we really did see the importance of Kendall Waston. You know, two of the goals I think victimized perhaps Pod Muduka, but in the end they were in holes that you know Kendall Waston would have been standing in, and that in itself makes you realize how important he's been to this team.
The one game this year, if you ever needed your stock to go up while out of the lineup, I mean, that was a perfect example of how not playing can show your value. They missed. I mean, they missed him. Those are the three-headed goals. You can't help but think, would that have gone in if Kendall was on the field? So, all right, look, Cause had a good season. Parker's had a good season. They didn't have a good final 10 minutes. Certainly Cause, everyone can see he's beaten the two headers, but, the way too much time on the balls coming in. I mean, the defensive collapse, I think, is certainly not on one or two players alone. I mean, the fresh legs coming in had to work harder defensively, I think. Just way too much time for guys to put balls in the box. I mean, these guys are good enough that if you give someone a couple of seconds, a couple of yards, they're going to pick out someone in the box, regardless of who's defending them. So, yeah, they would have been better off with Kendall in there. But I think with the players they had on the field, there's no reason they still shouldn't have been able to see that game out.
And, of course, there's a big game on Wednesday.
And a big game on Wednesday, which... And certainly some intrigue in this lineup as well Saturday, because two very, very big games. They want to win them both. They can win them both. There's enough quality and depth throughout this lineup that they can certainly dress two teams that will win these two games. But Carl Robinson has to get that balance right. So I'm a bit curious to see whether he goes with his usual, you know, what we now know is pretty established first string lineup on Saturday, or if he makes a couple of tweaks and saves a couple of guys for Wednesday. That certainly wouldn't surprise me. We saw Pedro getting some time with the first group today. You know, certainly it'd be harsh on Nico to lose his spot, but Carl has the advantage now, I think, of spinning it a bit. These are two really, really big games, and you can you could almost talk a Mesquita into believing that, you know, Wednesday is the more important one, and that's why we need you for Wednesday. So I think, you know, the psychology of how I'd love one day to be in on those player meetings where you hear how the coaches tell guys who's in and who's not. I mean, it's such a huge part of the game that we just don't talk about. We don't have access to those conversations, but that communication, those relationships, that's everything for a manager. And I think that's probably one of Carl Robinson's best assets, and the players, you know, say that as well. So this will be an interesting week for that and for his selections. And so yeah, I think how he plays with those guys, Morales, Mesquita, Rosales, Teixeira, we'll see. And then his center backs, I think, are the other kind of intriguing one there with Ka having the cheekbone fracture. I suspect he won't play on Saturday, but should be good enough to go Wednesday, perhaps with a mask on. So maybe do you split up the young guys? Do you pair Kendall with a Parker or Dean, and then Ka with a Parker or Dean? Or does Diego Rodriguez draw in? I think fans still have some concerns over Rodriguez. He's obviously had a terrible, terrible luck this year with injuries. I thought he's been better the last couple of games. Certainly the first half against Seattle, and then, and another unfortunate injury for him. So I would think we'll see Parker, regardless of cause injury, whether he could go or not Saturday. I think it's not worth the risk. I think we'd probably see Parker and Watson, but I have been wrong before. I will be wrong again.
Before I ask Mike Martin or Mark Nagos our question on whether or what we're having for our Sunday roast and what you're bringing, which is his deal. I don't know why he's trying to get us involved in it.
Let's not confuse things. I'm having a turkey provolone sandwich. That's
okay.
Actually what I'm having. I won't.
Nice touch.
I won't make up my meals like I do with him.
Nice touch. Did you happen to catch any of Wednesday night's Olympia v. Sounders?
I didn't. Thriller. I do want to go watch that. I've heard about it. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay.
Yesterday, and I stayed true to my day off.
Good man.
I did not turn my television on. Or my laptop.
It's
a day devoid of electronics.
Brad, what do you think of the Sounders? Brad Evans kind of there was a lot of it was a chip. You know, there was a snippy game. There was a lot of kind of Honduran and CONCACAF stuff going on at the end. Yeah. Brad Evans.
Oh, the Caps are going to be in for that. I can't wait for those two Olympia games.
And I know
it's going to be really, really intriguing, and it's such a huge part of winning in this competition is managing emotions, discipline, being prepared for the kinds of things that go on. It's going to be a whole new experience. It's going to be really fun, and there will be a lot of nonsense. There always is when you play in these competitions, and you know that's the learning curve in navigating this competition. I think it will take some time, I think, for the Caps to get used to that. They do have some play. The fact that they're so heavy on Latin Americans, I think, should give them, a bit of an edge in terms of adjusting to these kinds of games. You'd think these players know what it entails, but of course it depends on the lineup. You know, Carl Robinson dresses if he goes with a lot of young Canadians against Olympia. Fantastic preparation for these kids for their future Canadian national team games. I mean, that's part of the problem for Canada. I know I'm going a little bit off on a tangent here, but part of the problem for Canada is not enough experience from the guys coming through in CONCACAF environments, especially on the road. And I think one of the advantages you would hope long-term of Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto being in this competition is some of Canada's, under 23s, under 20s,
maybe the odd under 17 even, getting more time against these game, against these teams in these environments, and learning what it's going to take in qualification down the road.
All right, Mark. We'll see you on Saturday. We'll see you online. We'll see you in the page of the province. And
too many places.
Many
places. Are you sick of me yet?
No, never. Never.
My celebrity is finally starting to pay off, Patrick. I called to renew my quote on my condo insurance yesterday.
Oh.
And a lovely fellow at Canadian Direct, when I gave him my name, said, "Mark Weaver from the province?
There you go.
I read you every day."
Well, it's you know, in depth coverage.
Is that worth a discount?
You do have ads at the stadium, so you know that's what it is, right?
Those are really embarrassing. I get texts every time those ads run around those boards at the stadium. I get a few texts from friends taking the piss, but fine. I guess I'm a somebody.
Yes.
I should alert my parents.
Yes.
I still don't know what I do.
All right, Mark. You enjoy yourself.
Thanks for reading. Thanks for listening. As always,
folks, problemsports.com/radio. You can find us on iTunes. Just search for Whitecaps Weekly. We're on Stitcher. We're on TuneIn. All kinds of other places. We'll see you again next week.